Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Friday, June 14, 2024. A senior RSF commander was killed in Darfur during an attack on El Fasher town.
As a result, I expect two things. I expect a revenge because of his guilt. I also expect the disappearance of RSF from Al-Fashir and the surrounding area.
And some South Sudan lawmakers go for trauma healing.
Trauma, when you are released from trauma, you will have peace of heart and you will have peace of mind. You will not be able to fight another person. Because we know when you are holding somebody in your heart, a heart is like a prison that nobody will enter unless it's you to release.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudan Armed Forces say its forces have killed the commander of the Sudanese paramilitary rapid support forces, Ali Yaqub Jibril, a figure who was under U.S. sanctions. According to Reuters News, the army says Jibril died during a battle in the city of Al-Fashir. What photos and videos via WhatsApp appear to show Jibril's dead body being displayed by Sudan Armed Forces soldiers. The photos and the videos show people viewing his body in Al-Fashir. People surrounding the area were ululating and cheering in celebration, and celebratory gunfire was heard in the video. Jibril was a leading commander for RSF in Al-Fashir, the last major town in the region of Sudan that is controlled by the Sudan Armed Forces. The army said in a statement, Yaqub was killed as an RSF attack was drafted early Friday by its troops and allied joint forces fighting alongside the Sudan Armed Forces. RSF has been besieging Al-Fashir town, a city of 1.8 million people, for weeks, and UN officials have warned that the worsening conflict there could trigger widespread intercommunal violence. The UN Council, the UN Security Council rather, called on Thursday for a halt to fighting in the area. This program reached Yusuf Adib, the former governor of Central Darfur, and he confirmed that Ali Yaqub was killed.
What happened in Al-Fashir today is a very serious fighting between the RSF and the army from one side and the ex-rebel groups from the other joining the army. So what happened exactly is that they killed the commander of the RSF. He's one of the most important guys within the RSF, simply because from the political perspective, from army perspective, is so important person. So the RSF is going to lose an important person for them. As a result, I expect two things. I expect a revenge because of his guilt. I also expect the disappearance of RSF from Al-Fashir and the surrounding area. So those are the two scenarios for the RSF, either to continue fighting or just to withdraw and then disappear in different places. If they decided to continue, then...
Confirm to me, his name is Ali Yaqub Jibril.
That is his full name.
Yeah, what is his position in RSF leadership? Is he number two, number three, number four?
It seemed to be his number three guy. His full name is Ali Jibril, Ali Yaqub Jibril.
And you know what the tradition of Muslims, where is his body now?
I don't know. It's I don't know what where his body is, but it seems because those people, they are very angry with him. So maybe they throw his body, or I don't know really what happened to his body.
And so what is the general situation now in El Fasher? I mean, I saw videos, soldiers celebrating and women and children in the town celebrating. What is the situation? Has the fighting stopped or are they still fighting?
No, they're still fighting going on. And just celebrating, that celebration, it might bring a negative result. That is why I said there's two scenarios there. Either for the RSF to continue fighting in a revenge, from the revenge perspective, or either to withdraw. So what is happening there is just people celebrating the killing of this commander as important person within the RSF structure.
That was Adib Yusuf, the former governor of Central Darfur State. He spoke to us this past hour. South Sudanese traders say a plan to issue new national currency notes won't allow the rise in prices in the market. Some say the central bank did not inform them of the changes. Dennis Longonyi reports for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan's central bank is changing the wording on the country's currency and will issue £1,000 notes. But business people say the move will do nothing to stabilize rising prices in the markets. Waran Mojule has a mobile money business in Juba. He says people were not informed of the changes ahead of time.
I've been hearing people talking about the change of the words in the money. As we know, it is written in the notes like South Sudanese pound. But someone told me like there's a change. The words are written like South Sudan pound. Me even, I'm not. I only heard about, and even I've not heard officially from the central bank telling people about. If it's really there, my message is like, I'm still waiting if central bank can make awareness to the people of the change in the north.
Amin Nathaniel, a wholesaler trader in Juba's Monoki market, says the change won't make a difference since there are a lot of pounds in the market.
On my side, let them change the money all. Of course, those have money inside, they will come with it to the bank and get the other ones. If they are changed, it's okay. But if you change the sum of what, there is not any change.
A trader in Konyo-Konyo, only identified as Nelson, says he has not seen any difference from the previous currency change and insists the new changes won't have any effect on business, especially on illicit currency deals.
Anything dealing with the rate of dollar, it depends on the export of things we export to other countries. And then also, let's look at the implementation. Because now black market issues is causing us a lot of problems. So if they try to avoid the issue of black market of dollar, really things will drop down. Last time they brought 1,000 notes, nothing has changed yet. And even though they are bringing which note again, it will not change the situation.
Nathaniel wants the central bank to concentrate on regulating the prices and making hard currency available to the traders to help reduce skyrocketing prices.
I think if they change some of figures of number or the words, I think they have reasons. Even they have cigarette part they are doing. But if that one, it will help us for the rate of marketing, it will be good. We not refuse. We have the challenges for the marketing. Everything is just running high without control. Just all the thing we needed to control the marketed price plus the central bank price. This is the good thing we need.
Nelson argues that the central bank needs to support local businesses so that they are able to export, which will strengthen the South Sudanese pound against the dollar.
Most of the South Sudanese are illiterate. So if they publish it on newspaper, most people don't use newspaper. So they need something that is visual and audio that will make them understand what is really happening. Because now, let me say, 90% doesn't know what is happening. Maybe 10% of the South Sudanese know the note is changed.
On the 12th of June 2024, the Bank of South Sudan issued more 1,000 South Sudanese pounds notes, which it says is in line with legislation passed in 2012 and 2023. The newly issued £1,000 notes will have the same principal characteristics, with a change in the wording to South Sudan pounds instead of the South Sudanese pounds. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
From Juba, we go to Malakal, where members of parliament in Upper Nile State Legislative Assembly say instability has affected people across the country. The lawmakers say there are several cases of trauma and stress-related violence in Upper Nile State after the outbreak of the 2013 conflict. Mamer Abraham Kuot reports for VOA from Malakal Town.
South Sudan's continued violence due to politics, ghetto, ethnicity, and land has affected communities across the country. Health experts say the effects of violence has led to serious stress that is manifested in trauma. Adol Machar is the Rural Education Empowerment Programs Coordinator at Favor Africa Ministry International, a faith-based nonprofit. Machar says trauma healing promotes coexistence among communities and could break the cycle of violence in South Sudan.
Trauma, when you are released from trauma, you will have peace of heart and you will have peace of mind. You will not be able to fight another person. Because we know when you are holding somebody in your heart, a heart is like a prison that nobody will enter unless it's you to release what you have in your heart. And then you can be able to forgive and to live in peace.
Benanzi Ogwang Adwok is chairperson of Upper Nile State's Parliamentary Committee on Finance, Planning and Economic Development. Adwok says he is a victim of trauma and stress caused by conflict in the state.
Upper Nile State had been in war for a long time, and most of the people, communities, individuals, were being affected by trauma as a result of war, destructions, and displacement. And all these pictures are still in the head and in the mind of people of Upper Nile till movement. I myself, let me say, I was among these people affected by trauma and stress.
Ochan Nyuat, chairperson of Parliamentary Committee on Youth and Sports, says poverty is a contributing factor to trauma. He says youth and women are traumatized due to lack of employment and little to no income.
Youth are the most affected by the trauma, especially young women. The population of youth here, they are not employed. This trauma caused by the poverty, and also it caused by the displacement. Most of them are doing farming, but they fail even to have what they need for farming. This is what brings trauma to youth.
He says youth should be empowered with training and financial support so they can overcome trauma and be productive. Junoo Buom, chairperson of Upper Nile State's Parliamentary Committee on Health, says many people in Malakal still think about property they lost during conflicts. He says he will apply the techniques and skills he has learned through the training to help restore hope among the most vulnerable communities in Upper Nile State.
This knowledge I will apply to the people and to my colleague in the parliament to encourage our community. Because number one, when we came in this parliament, we come from the constituencies or counties or Payam and Buma. Now, after we're done with this, we'll have a plan to go out to our people and tell them nothing wrong. We lost something, but we have a chance to get it back according to this healing process to any citizen of this country.
In September 2019, USAID carried out an assessment on trauma across South Sudan. The findings indicate that both men and women were affected by trauma that led to self-harm and violence. The report recommended trauma awareness, response and support, justice and training of professional counselors and social workers to help communities recover from trauma. For VOA News, I am Amer Abraham Kwod, reporting from Malakal, Upper Nile State.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Muslims in the Democratic Republic of Congo say they will not celebrate Eid al-Adha. Find out why after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. On Sunday, Muslims around the world will be celebrating Eid al-Adha, marking the end of the pilgrimage to Mecca. In the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, many Muslims say they are finding it difficult to celebrate this important Islamic festival because of the region's security situation. Zanim Neti Zaidi from Goma has the details.
Eid al-Adha or Eid al-Kabir is the most important of the Muslim festivals. It is known as Tabaski in the countries of West and Central Africa. Amadi Kitsa is a displaced person living in the Buhimba camp near Goma in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. He says he doesn't think he'll be able to find anything to eat this Sunday at home, but he will still go to the mosque to thank Allah and pray for the return of peace in the country. Many Muslims living in Goma also say they are unable to celebrate Eid this year as they have been economically affected by the conflict in North Kivu province. M23 rebels and ADF militants, among other groups, have been battling the government for the region for years, displacing thousands of people and destroying farms and businesses. Mwajuma Kasiwa is a Muslim woman from Goma. She says that for the moment, Muslims are finding it very difficult to celebrate Dabaski because of the economic crisis caused by the war. In the past, everyone could find the means to buy a goat, a cow, or other things. But at the moment, life is becoming very complicated for people. Analyst Patrick Sheria studies social and security issues, says Muslims in North Kivu province should adapt to the current situation in the region and celebrate Eid al-Adha in different ways. He says this festival is often commemorated in the form of animal sacrifice, and it generally shaped that Muslims slaughter for this great festival, given the current economic situation, especially in the context of the conflict in North Kivu province. He suggests that the leaders of the Muslim community see how they can shorten things on the occasion of this festival by celebrating it in a symbolic way. Eid al-Adha commemorates the prophet Abraham, who was willing to sacrifice his son for God. Instead, God sent Abraham a ram to sacrifice. The holiday also follows the last day of the Hajj pilgrimage to Mecca. For VOA Africa, I'm Zane Mnechi Zaidi in Goma.
From Goma, we come to the United States, where U.S. President Joe Biden and leaders of the Group of Seven Wealthy Democracies are meeting in Italy, underscoring support for Ukraine's fight against Russia's invasion and the need for ceasefire in Gaza. White House bureau chief Patsy Wiedekwasora is traveling with the president and brings us this report from Borgo Egnizia, the G7 summit venue.
G7 leaders wrapped their first day of meetings with a skydiving demonstration, following a day of discussions on global challenges, including the wars in the Middle East and Europe. Ukraine received special focus. U.S. President Joe Biden signed a bilateral security deal with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky.
The steps we're going to take to make sure that Ukraine has victory and that Russia does not prevail is continued support.
G7 leaders agreed to Biden's plan to lend $50 billion to Ukraine to be paid back using the estimated $3 billion a year in interest income from $280 billion in immobilized Russian assets. EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen.
The finance ministers are now going through the details, for example, topics of backstops that are necessary, and clarify this as soon as possible.
U.S. officials say they expect a clear framework by the summit's end. President Volodymyr Zelensky voiced concern about Western staying power in support of Ukraine, but said he was grateful for the security deal.
The issue of NATO is covered through the text of the agreement. It states that America supports Ukraine's future membership in NATO and recognizes that our security agreement is a breach to Ukraine's membership in NATO.
Earlier this week, the U.S. slapped fresh sanctions on those helping Moscow's military-industrial base, including China-based companies selling semiconductors to Russia. The war in Gaza is also a focus. Will a ceasefire happen soon? Biden said he was not confident.
The biggest hang-up so far is Hamas refusing to sign on, even though they have submitted something similar. Whether it had not come to fruition remains to be seen. We're going to continue to push.
Seeking to stem the tide of African migrants coming to Europe through Italy, summit host Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni has made migration and investment in Africa key themes of her G7 presidency.
La questione della migrazione.
Italy has put at the center of its presidency the question of migration and the role, ever more worrisome, that the trafficking organizations are taking, obviously exploiting the desperation.
Maloney's push for Africa is in line with G7's Partnership for Global Infrastructure and Investment, PGI. The goal? To mobilize $600 billion in private infrastructure funding by 2027 as an alternative to the Chinese Belt and Road Initiative. Meetings will continue Friday with a focus on confronting Chinese overcapacity and on debt relief for low- and middle-income countries, and a session on AI ethics featuring Pope Francis. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News, Borgo Ignazia, Italy.
A U.S. president can serve a maximum of 8 years in office. So whether Joe Biden or Donald Trump is victorious in November, it would be their final term. Trump, however, is musing about a possible third term. From Washington, VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Harmon explains.
Campaigning for a second term, Donald Trump asked America's largest gun lobby last month about whether he might get a third term, referencing the four terms of President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who died in office in 1945.
FDR, 16 years, almost 16 years, he was four term. I don't know, are we going to be considered three term or two term? You tell me. Ronnie, what do you think?
Congress in 1947 approved the 22nd Amendment to the Constitution, limiting presidents to just a pair of four-year terms. That became law in 1951, after the amendment was ratified by the necessary 36 of the then 48 states.
The amendment really codifies what had been for a long time a political norm of not running for more than two terms.
That's Praveen Fernandez, vice president of the Constitutional Accountability Center. He explains the two-term tradition goes back to America's first president, George Washington, who ignored repeated pleas to run for a third term. With the start of the Second World War, Franklin Roosevelt broke with that tradition in 1940 and won a fourth term in 1944 as well.
I, Barack Hussein Obama.
Since the 22nd Amendment, six presidents have served two full terms, the most recent being Barack Obama. A prominent supporter for President Joe Biden, actor Robert De Niro, labels Trump a tyrant who wants to be president for life.
If he gets in, I can tell you right now, he will never leave. He will never leave. You know that. He will never leave.
I only want to be a dictator for one day.
Such declarations by Trump in this election cycle come as he faces criminal charges for attempting to overturn the 2020 election results. And that may presage future intent, according to constitutional attorney Fernandez.
The comments that Donald Trump recently made about a third term, which of course flies right in the face of clear constitutional text, are another reason to have concerns about someone who doesn't feel constrained by the clear text of our laws.
The President of the United States.
For Trump to legally pursue a third term, the 22nd Amendment would have to be repealed, and that would require a two-thirds vote in both chambers of Congress, and then ratification by at least 38 of the 50 states. Or 34 states could call a constitutional convention, and any action they approve would have to be ratified by 38 states. Only once in American history has a constitutional amendment been repealed.
Acting Secretary of State William Phillips is signing the 21st Amendment, and prohibition is repealed.
The 21st Amendment, ratified in 1933, annulled the unpopular and frequently violated 18th Amendment, which in 1919 banned alcoholic beverages. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America, and it's time now for us to hear what you think about this show and what you want us to do. We start with a voice message.
This is Peter Birch Anyang with Jonglei in Jonglei State Town of Bor. The opening of the stadium in Juba by President Kiir this week is really a good news. But the bad part of it is when the pipe Bradstar were beaten at home by the Sudanese players. I urge the Ministry of Youth and Sport to make sure that players are selected across the country and also make Bradstar free from corruption like the basketball is a federation in South Sudan. Let's appoint a person that can take the qualification of the players rather than where they come from.
And Samuel Remo in Ye writes, Hi Nabila and Tanza, the current transitional government of national unity has done very little to implement the 2018 peace agreement. Even the talks in Nairobi between the government and the holdout groups is a waste of time and resources. Balas Jerome in Yambio writes, Good evening, John and your colleagues. Red eye disease is really affecting people here in Yambio. Whenever you see someone wearing dark glasses in town, he is suffering from red eye infection. The Ministry of Health has done its part to educate people on how they can protect themselves, but most people are ignoring the health advices. Isaac Hamiz from Yambio writes, Allow me to inquire this management of VOA, why is Western Equatoria State not having its own reporter or correspondent that is supposed to be stationed to cover stories in Western Equatoria State? Please, I urge the management of our beloved media house to really recruit a journalist for Western Equatoria State. Hamis, I must answer you because I'm part of the management. We recruited close to 4 journalists in Western Equatoria, and all of them left us and went for better payment. Another listener called Thorn Mamor in Nimule writes, I wish South Sudan politicians should thank God for giving them the resilience. Citizens are not enjoying any sacrifices from their leaders, and we are reminding them that we will complain for lack of services, including having no salaries. God help the poor. Another listener writes, Nabil and Tanza, my name is Martin Manuel from Nimule. As a nationalist, I was happy to witness South Sudan hosting a soccer in our new stadium in Juba. Despite the loss to neighboring Sudan, I still enjoyed the game. Another listener writes from Bantu, I feel like this Nairobi peace talks between the holdout groups and the South Sudan government will come to success. But my worry, why the leader of the National Salvation Front, General Thomas Cirilo, is not there. Simon Gatwich is not there. And this concerns me because they are also leaders of the country. Another listener says, thank you for voicing my proverb. I will continue to sending proverbs to you. Views expressed in this segment does not represent the views of the Voice of America or this program. That's all we prepared for you this Friday, June 14, 2024. We now leave you with the Papa Wemba and the song Mukristo. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, engineer Peter Hindley, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Thank you.
Jean-Jacques.